That's the Indigo Girls playing live just the other week at the Eau Claire Music Festival. Amy Ray and Emily Salyers were some of the first publicly out lesbian performers. Their folk rock harmonies were a mainstay of the festival circuit for many years, especially at women's music festivals. So just a day after this performance, they came into our studio, where it was quieter and calmer, and I could ask them about their experience of playing women's music festivals, which are now kind of dying out.
Actually, we haven't, you'd think we have, we haven't played that many different women's festivals. We played Michigan Women's Festival a lot in Lilith Fair, but that's, I guess that's a women's festival to a certain degree, but it was so many men there too that it was more, it just felt like a festival for everyone that allowed a lot of women-fronted bands to play.
Right.
At a time when women-fronted bands weren't getting to play festivals, you know, it broke down a lot of barriers. But Michigan Women's Fest, this is the last year for it. So it's,
After 40 years.
So it's a big, a huge loss in the women's community, something though to have to be celebrated because they did bring so many people together with so many different ideas, and it was a touchstone for me for a lot of years of just political discourse and multi-generational discourse, and we dealt with race and transgender issues and sort of the deeper issues of the queer community and class issues and all that constantly happening at Michigan every summer with music as kind of the way to gather people and get people there, but so much more happening. It was an important environment, I think, for women that didn't get many opportunities to gather with just straight and gay, to gather with just other women and feel completely safe and talk about all the stuff that they needed to talk about so they could go back out into the world and feel empowered. And women needed that safe space for years, you know? We still do, but Michigan needs to, I think it's just time for it to go bye-bye, and I think everybody is sad but also knows that it's marking a certain time period right now.
Yeah, well, it's ending in the midst of some controversy, a lot of criticism over their refusal to accept transgendered people in the audience. You guys pulled out, right?
We pulled out. I will say that, like, I have profound, not mixed feelings about that issue because I feel very strongly about the transgender issue, especially with all the scientific research coming out about trans and biology and kids when they're born certain ways.
Like if somebody says they're a woman, they should let them in.
Yes, and Emily does too.
I do
feel very strongly about it. Mm-hmm. It was hard to pull out. It's a big like piece of my life, kind of to leave behind. But at the same time, it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. This is a human rights issue for us.
Well, I'm curious, what was it like in its heyday to play for an audience of all women? It must have been different.
Well, it wasn't any different from the way we came up in the bars playing, you know, when the majority of our audience was local women and they were so supportive. And in fact, you know, I'll speak for myself, fought a little bit of like, well, some of it was self-homophobia, not having fully come out and dealing with all that issue before we got signed and talked about being gay in the press. But playing for an audience of women it was something that was comfortable, familiar, but it's also something that, I mean, we still live in a world where most of the businesses or operations are male-dominated, and we still live, sexism. I mean, our culture reeks of it still. Mm-hmm. We've come far, but further to go, you know? Maybe twice as far to go. I don't know how to quantify it. But those festivals are liberating because they validate our experience, and we do not have to play up to any sort of cultural norms, expectations. And as artists who, you know, as lesbian artists, we remember days going into radio stations, and the guy programmers, they did not know what to do with us because they couldn't sexualize us according to their norms and their comfort levels. And
what do you mean? How would they treat you?
I mean, they're just like... It was awkward, uncomfortable. They couldn't talk about the way we dressed or how we looked, or so they really had nothing to say, you know.
Or made jokes, like sexual innuendo jokes to us or whatever, because everything fell flat.
Yeah.
Not because we're super serious, because we're actually really goofy. It's just dorks. It's awkward, you know. It's awkward.
Right. Has that changed?
These are the only kind of radio stations we really go to anymore.
Yeah, the other radio stations gave up on us, so we're fine now. There's no more awkwardness. So but no, it's changed. It has changed. I mean, I think it was like, it's funny, you know, it's changed in those really cultural touchstones. Like, they don't know what to talk about, so they talk about Ellen, you know, that's 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, they make references to things to make you more comfortable, mm-hmm. you know, when they're trying. And you can tell when people are trying. It's sweet.
We were talking about when you came out publicly, and I'm assuming you came out to your families, your friends.
Earlier.
Yeah, earlier. Was there a cost for you to coming out professionally and publicly?
It depends on what you mean by cost. Like, cost seems like, did you sacrifice for it? And I'd say no, because I wouldn't change a thing. I went through my own journey of overcoming my fear about it. And we certainly became immediately stigmatized.
That's kind of what I meant.
Yeah.
I mean, did you have people canceling concerts or refusing to play
songs? No. It's
just the perception of us.
The repercussions were that we just started to get pigeonholed and maybe not played on certain stations or whatever, or talked about or cut down or made fun of sometimes.
Parodied on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Not invited to sing, but parodied on a sketch, you know, stuff like that.
But was coming out at that time, so when was that? Like
91.
And it was after Closer to Fine.
Yeah, it was after that. But we didn't make like a big decision. We're going to come out. It was just like, I think, a moment at like a college radio interview press conference or something where you answered some question really openly, and that was it.
Really? Do you remember that moment?
Vaguely. I mean, my hat's off to Amy, because Amy wouldn't have had any problem with it ever, you know? She's just that way, thank God, you know?
Do you remember the moment? What was the question?
I can't remember. It was a question about gay issues, and Emily just said something about being gay, and I was like, boing. You know, like that kind of thing, like, wow. But, you know, the truth is I was scared too, and it was convenient for Emily to be the one that was more scared maybe, because I hated myself, and, you know, my inner homophobia was extreme, even though I was gay, you know, I still did not, you know, my gender was weird. My sexuality was weird. It was just like everything just felt like a constant struggle. And it did feel really good to finally have that one little piece just be like, all right, we'll talk about it.
Was that also part of finding your voice as musicians? And did your songs at the time, do you think, reflect that?
That's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that it can't help you grow to feel that sense of freedom, because being like imprisoning yourself or allowing yourself to be imprisoned by the constructs of culture that's oppressive is toxic to your being. And so I think once you open up and you clear all that dust and dirt away, it allows you to become a better artist, you know? And then the other important thing is why I wouldn't change a thing is that we have lots of people come up and say that because of our music and because of coming out, they were able to, it helped them come out. And that is the most important thing, was to be members of a movement for civil rights and human rights.
So as you look at the music industry today with so many younger women fronting bands of their own, any advice?
For women, just specifically, I always just say, like, if you feel like you're knocking your head against the wall, just create your own opportunities and just keep doing that, because that's what all the women that came before us did, all of our mentors, all of the leaders that we look up to, they were like, screw the system, we'll just create it ourselves. So
I guess what I was thinking, though, thinking about for young women who are performing today, there's a way in which, you know, as the Michigan Women's Festival ends and you sort of think, wow, is this the end of an era? Maybe we don't really need the women's movement anymore. Maybe we're in a post-feminist era or something. And I think,
no way. Feminism is not dead.
Yeah, we need it. We need girls' rock camps. Really need girls' rock camps. Yeah.
And we need a woman president. Oh, did I say that?
So what have you been writing? Is there something you can play for us?
Yeah. This is a song about a relationship and then all the things that sort of happened that affected my psyche from New Orleans. So it's called Elizabeth. Three streets off the grid, we were barely kids, but we were old enough to drink in Louisiana. We listened to The King Must Die on the willows, drank the wine that we could afford from the work-study manor. We were young, but not that young to be cutting our fingers, mixing our blood, climbing the fence of the St. Louis Cemetery. We caught on my heart's desire, as big as a 1788 fire. When you put on Little Queenie and bring me another whiskey, Elizabeth, the last I heard, you're in Savannah. You got married after art school, happily. I don't want to look
look you up. I'm pretty sure it's just enough that I remember you fondly.
Amy Ray and Emily Saliers are the Indigo Girls. They were performing live in our studio, a track from their new CD, One Lost Day. That's it for today, but stay in touch. Let us know what you want to hear next. You'll find us on Facebook or on Twitter. The handle is TTBook1. To the Best of Our Knowledge comes to you from Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to audio engineer and sound designer Joe Hartke for making today's show sing. And to producers Charles Monroe Kane, Raymond Tungekar, Craig Ely, Doug Gordon, and Emma Ryskowski. Our theme music comes from Steve Mullen from Walk West Music. Kirill Owen is our technical director. Steve Paulson is our executive producer. And I'm Anne Strainchamps. Thanks for listening.
PRI, Public Radio International.